So hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby and I will be joined by various members of the EV Cafe crew. And this week I've got JC, John Curtis. Say hello, John.
Hello, darlings. Yeah, I'm just here as Paul's glamorous assistant, full of sequins and loveliness.
And for those of you on audio, it's all true. We have the amazing privilege of getting to know and understand some of the wonderful pioneers, innovators, and collaborators of our industry. Today is no exception. We have the wonderful Fiona Howarth. Welcome, Fiona.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Fiona, listen, before, as the tradition is growing, we do a little bit of research on our guests. One of my favorite things to do is to put your name in Google and see the images that come up. And you know what? It is pretty impressive, actually, because you usually get some other random Fiona Howarths popping up, you know. Superstars on the boardwalk and all of that kind of stuff. But actually, you are the superstar on the boardwalk. There is you are 8 of the first 12 pictures on Google. I don't know if you know that, but you should check it out.
Is this an unusual name?
Well, maybe, but we are tech women, Innovation Zero, the Independent Newspaper, Insights into Success. I mean, you know, that's impressive in itself. But do you know what? We went further than that. We had a little look around LinkedIn. And she is smart, savvy, with vision, exceptional strategic and commercial acumen. And do you know what? The bit I love? And a great heart. Love that. And she is intellectually fast, emotionally aware, and highly technically competent. Because, of course, a qualified engineer.
I had to pay a lot of money for that. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I mean, these are really random people that have put them there, but but Fiona, when you hear all of that, how does it make you feel?
Do you know, it's lovely when people say things like that about you, isn't it? It's like when you kind of when you want to look back on your life, that's the kind of things that you hope people will say. I think, especially the big heart.
Yes,
and so. Yeah. If I can leave a little bit of that in the world, then I think that would be a nice way to be.
And Fiona, before you go on, I've been doing a Google search whilst you've been on. So Fiona appears in 8 of the first 10 or 12 pictures. Paul Kirby, you're 5th on the list. So there are other Paul Kirbys, but you are number 5. I put in John Curtis. I got to 23 and got bored. I wasn't in any of them.
There are a lot more Johns and Pauls, presumably, than Fionas as well. So yeah. I think
it's much higher.
I was going to say about the name David, which I realise is neither of your names, but when we were doing Powerloop, what was interesting was like 50% of the applicants had the name David. Isn't that really strange? Yeah. And these people just kept on applying to, you know, join our vehicle to grid project called David. And it was like, there's another David. And there are some things that, you know, there are just some popular names for popular things. And so John, there's a lot of amazing Johns. So the fact that you're even in the top 30, I think, is amazing.
I have a little confession to make. Ever so often, I get to go to the BBC studios in Scotland and to work. And I rocked up and stole Professor John Curtis's car parking space. So Professor of Politics, who was doing a broadcast on the election. And I rocked up as a motoring journalist and said, yeah, hello, I'm John Curtis. And Mr. Curtis, there you are, space number 1.
That's brilliant. I love that.
But do you know what? So
Fiona Harris. Yeah, go on.
Well, I was gonna say, do you know what? That is probably one of the most secure person answers I've ever heard, actually. Because I think it comes with the, your response to that was very humble, very contrite, but also quite secure. Because I mean, if somebody said that about me, I'd be all over the place. I'd be like, oh, I don't know. You know, it wouldn't leave me feeling comfortable. Because, I mean, look, you're a successful CEO, that we should say that, right? We are the CEO of Octopus EV. Give me the full title. Octopus Electric Vehicles, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we say often Octopus EV. So when we started this, it was like nearly 6 years ago, unbelievably. And at that point, EV wasn't really a known word, a known phrase. And so we were Octopus Electric Vehicles. Whereas actually, you know, with the transition of time, it's amazing how mainstream EVs are becoming, how much people know about it. It's a bit like when we first discovered Wi-Fi. What's Wi-Fi? Wi-Fi, you know. And EV is similar now, right? It's like commonly known, it's commonly understood. So yeah, Octopus EV.
Octopus EV. We'll go with that. So success, you know, and all of that built on thing, but has it always been successful? Has life always been successful for you, or are there things that you tried and they didn't work out?
For sure, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's things in Octopus EV land that we tried and didn't work out. We looked at public charging and we nearly bought a public charging company and that didn't work out. But in fact, we did some other things in public charging, and that was the start of what's now the Electric Universe. Electroverse, I've got to get the branding right. It's now the Electroverse network, which is like one app and one card across, what, 380,000 chargers. But actually, it started off with us trying to get into that space and own assets, and that didn't work out for us. But even before that, so I mean, I'll set out up front for the listeners, like, I'm a bit of a nerd, and I have been for a while, and I'm also comfortable about that, actually. It's been a long-standing thing, and I'm happy to be a nerd and be proud. But along with that, it means that I've always been interested in renewable energy. I've been interested in sustainability. Like, I worked with BMW doing fuel cells when I was much younger. And then when I was at Bain, which is management consultancy, and I took a leave of absence, and I was looking at my skills, and I was like, oh, I'm a consultant, and I want to help people reduce their carbon emissions, and I can work with businesses. And businesses at the time, there were like £3 trillion worth of NPV positive, lower carbon projects untapped. That was the McKinsey number. The McKinsey number, $3 trillion of projects that you could put in place and they would pay back and be really positive for these companies. And I was like, I'm going to help them do this. I'm going to help them make money. I'm going to save energy. I'm going to save them carbon emissions. This is going to be so amazing. And it was terrible. And no one cared. And it was too much effort for them. And I would like rock up. I worked with a major hospital, actually, which was a very friendly client. She was the chief operations officer at this major hospital. But the problem was that her priorities were obviously, you know, care of the people that came to use the hospital, of the customers, essentially, of the hospital, and looking after them and making sure they had great service, rather than thinking about her energy bill or actually carbon savings. And I think things have changed now, but I tried to do that. I tried to do that for 8 to 10 months, and it was really, really hard work. By the way, I think I might have been 10 years too early, because I think there's a lot of companies now that are really, really actively trying to save carbon emissions and are really doing great jobs at it. But that was a complete flop.
Well, it's good to know that actually the foundations are, sometimes in the things that we weren't successful.
I think it's really important to talk about the things that weren't successful. By the way, I could tell you a few more. Because, you know, apparently for every entrepreneur, there's like 3 fails, right?
Okay.
So, you know, you typically have 3 failures before you have a successful business in the entrepreneurial world. So actually, it's really common. And I think that's part of the thing with all of this. You need to kind of remain resilient and like try things. And I think, you know, you test out different products, different propositions. If it doesn't work, you iterate, you pivot. And then finally, you find the thing that works, the thing that people love and the thing that people really want to buy. And is you both know, and many listeners will know, salary sacrifice is what we focus on a lot in Octopus EV. And salary sacrifice genuinely makes it cheaper to get an electric car rather than a petrol diesel car on a monthly basis. And that's even before fuel savings, which we could talk about if that's of interest. But then when you look at the number one thing putting people off making that switch to clean green driving, it's cost. And salary sacrifice tackles that and also puts like quite a lot of money back in that customer's pocket, that driver's pocket. So unsurprisingly, it's really great. And it's really great for the businesses because it helps with, you know, hiring people, with retention, with kind of overall engagement, because they feel like their business is doing something good for the planet and good for them. And so all around, it's this win-win. And then now that that's kind of flying, it's like, okay, this is great. We're making a difference. Let's go. Let's make this as good as we can.
Brilliant.
Sorry, I went off on one.
No, this is so important, John.
What it illustrates, Fiona, is that you're a hugely motivated human being. Is that something that's always been there? Were you like that at school and you're just one of those energy-filled enthusiasts who just gets on with stuff and makes things happen?
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it?
Is that you?
Yeah, I think it might be, yeah.
Do you ever stop? I mean, do you relax? Do you ever just stop and say, enough now, I'm going to go and crochet, or I'm going to go and read a book, or do something something else?
I tell you what, I got back into The West Wing. Have you ever watched The West Wing?
Oh, love.
I love The West Wing, and I've rediscovered it recently. That's my downtime. I find it's like old friends watching The West Wing. But there you go. But I also... I do enjoy that. I think even more so, I've learned over the last few years that I need to find downtime, because before kids, you then just used to find the weekends and things, right? And you'd like put your feet up, you'd relax, you'd go to the gym, whatever it was, you know, that you might be doing to enjoy and chill out for a bit. Whereas with kids, I love them to bits. I've got two girls, they're 8 and 6, but it's intense. and so now I find that I need to have time, carve out time to kind of relax. And by last summer, it had been a very busy start to the year. And by last summer, I kind of finally got a break and went away for a few days to Cornwall, which was blissful. And I relaxed and, you know, just did nothing for a few days and went for some walks, coastal walks.
Do you find that it's expected that you don't have children? I know my wife's the director of a bank and we've got 4 kids, and people assume because she's female and she's well placed in a business that she can't possibly have children. Do you find that people make that assumption?
Not an octopus, interestingly. So I think it's actually one of the reasons why I've stayed so long, and that I felt I could set my own boundaries and set my own ways of working at Octopus. So Greg, who's our group CEO, sets the bar himself. So 2 days a week, he leaves early to go and pick up his kids from school, which I think is amazing. So it's not like a female's had to say, do you know what? I'm leaving early twice a week to go and pick up my kids. Yeah. It's the male CEO who's actually set that tone, which then gives permission, has set permission for everyone. But I think a female CEO could also do it, set permission for everyone.
Yeah,
but I think it's you know, then somebody is not sitting there going, oh, I'm the female and I'm doing this and I'm making a stand. He's just done it. That's okay. Yeah. He sees his kids. By the way, he works incredibly hard, so he no doubt logs on later, you know, and works weekends and so forth. But he sets those boundaries, and that's what works for him. And we had a wonderful after-school nanny actually picking up the kids who graduated. She was a student. She graduated and got a job at Coca-Cola. Fantastic. I was very excited for her. Very sad that we were going to have to say goodbye. And I was trying to hire for another after-school nanny. I was like, but I want this job. So I was trying to figure out ways to like do a bit of after-school with my kids. And so maybe I start a bit earlier. And actually we've got, she still does a day a week, interestingly, because she's really close to the family. And, you know, my husband does a bit now as well, and he's found a bit more balance as well with working, with grandparents do it. And then I do like 2 or 3 days a week. But interesting, that came because Greg set the tone. And I think that's super important. And I think lockdown has been a leveler for all of this as well. Yeah. So, you know, my team meetings, Octopus EV team, were, you know, privileged/, you know, I don't know what the other word would be, to shows that were put on by my kids. So this is when they were a bit younger than they are now. And my kids were on some Disney tracks. I think it was Under the Sea from Little Mermaid. And they danced their hearts on camera on a kind of Zoom call from my team at the end of one of our team meetings. And so so the team, they're basically part of the family now.
It's amazing. Fiona, you mentioned, the position of women in industry and that kind of stuff. I know that you've created a group called the Stella Set.
Tell me
about the Stella Set.
Well, I guess I haven't always worked in places where it's been as well balanced in terms of how men and women have been treated. And also, there have been places that I've worked where there haven't been great female role models. And I'm kind of a strong believer that if you can, it's much easier to be it if you can see it. Okay, and so like learning.
Nice.
And actually, I think this is true of like, I don't think it's just a female thing. I think if you can speak to somebody who kind of has the attributes or the kind of ways of working that you want to embody and that you want to live, it's much easier for you to then adopt that. So actually watching Greg pick up his kids twice a week, I'm like, yeah. Of course, that's a no-brainer. Why isn't everyone doing this? But it's much easier to be it if you can see it. So actually, I think sharing stories and back to your point, John, actually, in a lot of places, you aren't expected to be seen, you're with kids. And so then you're like, how do I make this work? How do I balance doing a demanding job and having kids? How does that work? How have people overcome some of the challenges before? And so initially it became a kind of place where we could get together, share stories, get in some inspirational speakers, a bit like you do broadly for the EV industry and for people listening in. And you get some ideas, don't you? You get some food for thought and you're like, oh, I like that. I'm going to try that out. Or maybe that could work for me, or actually somebody else I know. I should tell them about that thing that somebody's mentioned to me. So it's a sharing of ideas and inspiration, really, I'd say.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. That's perfect. So, we've kind of got a picture of your. It's actually work and family, isn't it? You do seem to merge that really quite beautifully. But talk to us.
Seem to merge it. It's never. Somebody the other day said to me, what's your superpower? And I'm like, I continue to improve on things, because it's always a work in progress, I'd say. Sorry, I need to interrupt, Paul.
No, it's an important point. I think, do we ever stop trying to improve this sort of stuff? And I think it's good to have that as a conscious intention. I think being intentional about these things, which is coming out through a lot of what you're saying, is like being intentional around balancing family and giving, empowering women in the workplace and being an example. All of these things are intentional things that are definite, and that really comes across. But how did you get to be the woman that you are? Talk to me about your family, your friendships early on in life. What were the forming experiences of your youth?
Yeah, well, I've got two brothers, one older, one younger.
And that makes strong
middle child, yeah. Huh?
Middle child. I didn't like to think that, I couldn't do anything because I was a girl, obviously. That's not an excuse, is it? Anything my brother can do, I can clearly do too. And I think, he was friendly. My older brother was friendly in that, but it gave me a kind of benchmark to kind of work towards. And that was quite fun. I used to do a lot of sport as a teenager. I used to do a lot of rowing, actually. So I actually rowed for Scotland, rowed for England, and I actually rowed for Britain as well.
Wow, why did I not find this out in my research? I'm useless.
And in fact...
What a tramp! England and Scotland?
I should tell you what happened. So I grew up in Scotland. I grew up in Scotland and I came down to England for my gap year. The nerd in me took me to Dyson my gap year, developing high-speed motors, which is in all the hand dryers. Anyway, I know I'm such a nerd. But anyway, bear with me. So I was rowing then at Gloucester and I'd gone back up to Scotland to train for our the summer event, the home country's event. And I got up there and they said, no, no, we spoke to somebody associated with the club you're rowing at in England. They said you're rowing for England. And I said, well, I'm not rowing for England. I'm not even selected for England. And I'm up here and I row for Scotland. And they said, oh, well, we've given your place to someone else from your school that I knew that I used to row with who was younger than me. And if you want to come back, then you're going to have to chuck her out, basically. And this might be her, she was in her last year at school by this point. It might have been her only chance to row for Scotland. And actually, I was like, well, that's, she's got to have that chance. That's a really important part of her story. And so I was like, oh. So I came back to the team in England. I was like, we better win and get selected for England because I still would like to go to this event. It's a great party. They have an amazing party. And so I still would like to go. So we did. But I was actually a bit embarrassed because then I did get selected for England and then we beat Scotland, which was really I didn't know. It was all with good intentions and then it all kind of went a bit wrong.
See, this is a story I think that many people must have. They grow up in Scotland, they play for Scotland, and then they get the opportunity to play for the big boys, the English.
Oh, stop it. Paul, I've got out of today that when I go up to the M6 and the services and I'm standing there drying my hands in the gents, Fiona Howarth, she invented this high-speed motor, you know. I know her.
But I'm very entertainment now when you're in the loos.
You'll be thinking of Fiona.
They go very fast, those motors. They go something like 100,000 RPM. And it's just, it's phenomenally fast. And we used to run them as fast as we could. We had all these motors set up in the lab and we run them as fast as we could for as long as we could until different bits exploded. And then my role was basically like soldering different components back into these test boards, and then we'd find out which of the components were weaker and then we'd try different ones. It's the same story, right? It's the iteration. It's the
find out the weak bit,
put in a different bit, try that, keep trying it until you kind of get something amazing and then it flies. Yeah, it was actually, I hadn't appreciated how similar that story was.
Completely.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So come back to your family then. So you've done this rowing. Been impressive.
So my mum used to be a teacher. So I think my mum really invested in us as children and like helping to be the best we could be and like driving us around to like every class possible, which is probably where that kind of, trying to do everything comes from. And at the same time, my mum came from East Kilbride near Glasgow. So, her parents ran newsagents and my dad's family was from Dewsbury in Yorkshire. And we're like a teacher and a midwife, like that's their kind of backgrounds. And they were both actually the first in their generations to earn their families to go to university. Like, so they both really valued education. So they worked really hard to give us a really good education. But at the same time my dad had an expectation that we should work hard. We were being gifted this good education. Don't waste it. Come on, you should go and do your work now and that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of encouragement, but also an expectation of doing a lot.
Brilliant.
If that makes sense.
You said there was an expectation of achieving lots, and clearly you have, Fiona. I mean, you're somebody who is just stratospherical. You're up there with the clouds and space rockets and stuff. But life isn't always like that, is it? And there are times that test you, and you've been tested. You've talked about there have been business failures. What's a time that's really tested you personally, that's made you look at yourself and say, I'm going to have to pull my bootstraps up now?
Yeah, I mean, I think lockdown tested many of us, didn't it?
How did it test you?
So I think, I laugh, but I mean, it was tough, right? It was tough at the time where we were at home. There was two of us with two jobs, two kids, one at school, one not. And we're trying to fit in lots of work and, in the evenings, downloading things for homeschooling, uploading things for homeschooling. trying to figure out if I should be sitting on Tesco, trying to get an entry point onto there. And everything was tough, right? Like, should I be doing the washing now? Oh, I haven't cleaned that bathroom for at least a week. Oh, there's no one here to help me. And so I think that was really tough. And I remember actually, I remember another podcast that I recorded at the time. And I didn't, and he asked me the question, this leading question on the podcast, which I'd shared beforehand, which was like, Fiona, how do you recover? And what actually happened was I used to go and hide in the bathroom because the kids wouldn't come in to the bathroom. And so, you know, when like those moments, like, I just want a bit of peace and quiet. I just want a bit of a break. And I remember reflecting on that, which I laugh about it, but that was a really tough time. And you know what actually happened was I was like, right, I've had it. I love this business. I love this sector and everything, but the potential in this business is bigger than what I can give it. And I don't think I could do it. And actually, I haven't shared this more broadly, but I called up one of my team members, a chap called Gajit, and I said, no, I don't think I'm going to make this. This is too hard and I can't make it all work and it's not going to come through. And I want to make sure you're well looked after because you have been amazing. So you've been juggling all these different things. Let's talk about that so that I can tee that up for you. And he said he spent 2 hours on the phone with me that day immediately. He didn't let me off the phone. And he figured out ways in which he and the team could work with me to make it work. And I'm welling up because he was amazing, absolutely amazing. He's still with me today and we've been working together for 5 years now. And I would not have got through that time without him.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's like, he just problem solved it all the way through with me.
It's that thing about people. That's the thing that I keep coming back to with you, that you give a great deal as a human being and you attract like-minded people. You have people around you who really care. I'm blessed to have Paul. There are days when things don't always go according to plan with the EV Cafe. And I have Paul. Paul is somebody I reach out to regularly because he's equally as mad as I am. And you do that. You find those people, don't you, in life who are quite amazing. Have you got school friends and university friends who you're still in touch with that really matter to you?
Yeah, definitely. There's a really good friend called Morven, who very Scottish name. She lives up in on the side of a loch, actually, in the Trossachs National Park, and she's an amazing, wonderful, long-standing friend since school. There's another friend, though, actually, that I met along with the kind of opportunities that my parents gave me, as well as sport and academics. I also played a musical instrument.
Go on, tell us.
I played the clarinet, and so I did music courses as well with my clarinet. And this good friend Gemma, who played the clarinet with me on those music courses at the age of 14, I still see her regularly. So we were in touch last night about what we'll do for my birthday.
Wow.
Unfortunately, not a James Bond themed party, which, you know, I believe you've got on the cards for this weekend. But I will aspire to such an amazing party. But there's friends like that. Claire, who is our tech director, actually, she and I got an engineering scholarship together at university. She was at Imperial, I was at Oxford, and we both got the same engineering scholarship. And we connected then, and we just kept in touch. And it was when we kind of started doing the Power Loop project. It was quite a complex project, and I'd worked with her on another project. I was like, this is your superpower, pulling together these complex projects and understanding this and these, you know, tricky different organizations. And, you know, you needed a lot of resilience for that project. So I phoned her up. I was like, what do you think? And I think you're totally right. Finding those amazing people along your journey is just so special. So special.
It's so clear. There's a couple of things that I'm beginning to sort of see, and actually we see it as we talk to people, you know, on these sorts of podcasts. But the word resilience comes out time and time again with people that are doing something that maybe hasn't been done before, and you know, you're making you're making a way, and you know, as we've sort of reflected on your career so far, you know you're pioneering, you're leading. What is it that has given you that resilience, do you think?
Yeah, I was pondering this in a different context actually very recently. I think that with all of us in this sector, it's so much bigger. The challenge is so much bigger, but yet the opportunity to give impact is so much bigger as well. So I don't know if you've seen, for a team meeting recently, I was preparing on climate change stuff, and I was looking at some of the more recent videos from The Economist on what a 3-degree change, temperature change will make. And I don't know, you should look it up. It was a good YouTube video. And then there were some other ones around the Al Gore footage from the World Economic Forum in Davos. And it's so true, right? The consequences, if we don't make the change now, could be enormous, whether it's, you know, extreme weather events, water conflicts, you know, extinction, even in the worst case. These are huge. And I don't know about you, but my kids, I'd really like them and their kids and their kids after them to have the amazing kind of opportunities in place to live that we have, yeah, and to have a planet that's there for them and every other person's kids, by the way, as well. And so I think there's this massive opportunity. And we'll, in that Davos piece, Al Gore says, we need to make the change of 50% reduction by 2030. We know this, right? For the 1.5 degree, if you want to limit it to 1.5 degree change, you need to reduce carbon emissions by 45%, I think it was, by 2030. That's not very long. But he goes on to say, we've got all the technologies we need to make that change. We've got all the technologies. And then the other 50%, the technologies are in development, right? And then we need to make that change by 2050 for all the rest. Let's just go at it. Let's just find out what's stopping us. And the thing was, what's amazing about EVs, right, is they are so great. They're great to drive. They can save you money. Mm. They're really convenient. And if you can charge at home, or maybe you can charge on the street outside in the lampposts. And yeah, there are some challenges with some of the public charging, but people like GridServe have made such a big impact now in terms of taking over the electric highway and doing all the upgrades. The different cards and apps, whether it's Electroverse or a number of different other providers that now are simplifying the way in which you can pay for your charging, etc. This is all amazing. And so actually, the more that we do, and I love what you guys do, I love every bit of what comes out of the EV Cafe, because it's basically spreading the word, right? You're like, we just need to get out there and make it really well known and provide good, helpful advice and good education, and then give good service, so that people have good experiences off the back of it. And so I think the more that we can do, the more that we can make that impact in transport. And by the way, transport is now the number one emitting sector. If you look at the Bayes stats, it's like 24%. Mm-hmm. And if you see what power has done, power is like, you know, the energy sector has reduced that, the power sector has reduced their emissions by 70% since 1990 levels. It's amazing. And transport like had a little dip, but look, we can do that now. And so that's those bigger picture things. That's really motivating, isn't it? That's when you're sitting there going, oh, I had a bit of a tough interaction today. Actually, you kind of want to like just be like, do you know what? This is bigger than you or me. How do we just make this go quicker? And you kind of navigate your way through, I think.
So it's, Fiona, let me play devil's advocate just for a minute.
Okay.
You've talked about the environment. And you've talked about climate change a lot, and it's something that we spend a great deal of our time talking about with clients and with people we meet. Because climate change is used as the justification for an awful lot of change of behaviour, change of technology and so on, to reduce the impacts of climate change. Yet climate change has been an ever-present. It has always been here. It will always be here. And there are naysayers out there who say the science is flawed. We will always have climate change. And EVs may improve air quality. They may be better than digging out fossil fuels from the ground. But the reality is climate change, you ain't going to stop it no matter how hard you work. How do you respond to that personally?
Do you know, I always want to share some of the other things that I found on when I was preparing for this other meeting. There's, you know, those videos where it's like, here's the temperature, and it's like coloured over the years, and you see the years ticking by, and it's, you know, bluey greeny, a bit of hint of red, bluey greeny, hint of red, and you can see it's like variable over the years, and then it gets to, from 1990 onwards, particularly from 2000 onwards, and it's going to get red, 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 and it's so accelerated, this kind of higher temperature. And then you look at what the scientists say, and the scientists that, like, by the way, they hate saying anything definitively because it's really hard to say anything definitively in the science, don't they? They hate it. And they're like, they caveat it all. I don't know if you jump into the IPCC report, which I do, you know, looking at the climate change stuff. And it's like really hard to navigate the key messages. But now they're like, unequivocally, this is done, you know, this is brought about by human behavior. This is brought about by what we are doing. And by the way, if we keep it up, we're really confident now that this is what the outcome's going to be. And that, you know, from a place where they've been like, it's 80% likely, or it's, you know, we think it's, what, you know, there's an 80% chance this happened. They're like, yeah, this is happening. And we as scientists are getting together to try and campaign now, because you really need to listen to it, everyone, help us out. I think, you know, I was interested in the 90s, right, when I was at school. And at the time, there was a bit more uncertainty. There's not any uncertainty right now. And I don't know about you, but even if it was the 90s, kind of like, there's a possibility this might happen. Well, if there's a possibility, I mean, I don't really want to take that bet. And so I would prefer to have the option to have an amazing planet for, you know, the future kids.
I just love the fact that throughout that, You smiled the whole way through that. Most of us would get defensive, and most of us would go, but the science says so, and no. You didn't. You smiled and gave a really articulate explanation of why it matters to you. And we need more Fiona Howarth. Sorry to cut across you, Paul. We just need more.
We do. We do. We definitely do need more Fiona Howarth, because...
I'm scared by that thought, actually, but...
Yeah, but we're not, so it's okay, you know, it's okay. But the thing for me, you know, we talk about that 80% sort of chance. If somebody said to me, listen, Paul, right, you can cross the road, there's an 80% chance that you're going to get hit by a car, but you've got to get across the road, would you do it? I know.
And there's your mate standing next to you, be like, nah, Paul, nah, you're not. And they're just joking with you. They're just joking. You should definitely cross. You know, would you? No, you wouldn't,
No, but that's it.
Unequivocally, if you keep this up, if you cross that road, that's going to happen. And the mate standing is like, nah, it's not. They're just joking with you. I mean, who
and
are you
people
gonna...
are still crossing the road, right? They're still doing it.
Yeah. But I've thought about this as well quite a lot in the context of when we're talking about climate change, there's a real risk of eco anxiety. Have you come across this concept? It's people are talking about it quite a bit at some of the COP events I went to with these younger people that are now really worried, right? So whether it be some children are choosing, you know, teenagers are now saying they don't want to have kids. They don't want to risk bringing their kids into this world because of climate change and because what their children might be having to deal with in their lifetimes. There are other people where they're like, I don't want to almost get in a petrol diesel car, but I can't afford an electric car. And so therefore I don't, every time I get into this petrol diesel car, which I can afford right now, I feel really guilty and I feel really bad about it, but I need it to be able to get to work or whatever it is that they need. And so this kind of stress that's becoming associated with it. And I think actually that could be more damaging for us actually ahead of some of the impacts of climate change in this country, because I think people will be very concerned about it. And I think what we do need to do is really start to paint the vision of the solutions and to really get together, as I think the EV industry are already doing, to push for those changes, push for those solutions, paint them. One of the things we do a lot at Octopus is, look, this is happening. Like, we don't kind of say, oh, if we do this, it's like, no, let's just go do it. And then it's like, could we have dynamic pricing for EV drivers? Will they actually change their behavior? It's like, well, yes, definitely, because now we've done it. Like, you know, it's like, and now other people should do it too, because we can change people's behavior. We can encourage people to charge up in the middle of the night when it's cheaper, etc. We can, you know, all these kind of things. We just need to do it. We need to paint the vision of what it's going to be like over the next 10-20 years, And then that energy that could suddenly become overwhelming and concerning goes into the solution and goes into helping us create that future rather than becomes a holder back. That was a bit of a long answer. So that's a new one.
It's good.
Yeah, go on.
Well, I was thinking because we as we sort of get to the end of a podcast, we tend to sort of go saying like, Fiona, what advice would you give to the teenage you? But for me, I'm sort of thinking, I mean, you are being the example of what, you know, of what change looks like and how driving change can happen. What advice would you, I mean, if you were talking to a group of kids today in a school, in a university or whatever, what would you be saying to them? What is the call to action from Fiona Howe to the next generation today?
Yeah, this is a multi-decade change that's going to happen. And as well as it, by the way, having great impact and purpose, it's also for creating huge opportunities, right? If I look at some of the early joiners in the Octopus Energy business and the teams they're leading now, or the international opportunities they had, it's amazing. It's super exciting. So this whole transition that we're going to see is going to be one of the most exciting transitions, and it's going to be one of the most fulfilling transitions to be part of. So go get the skills, start building those relationships, finding those special people that are going to be with you on that journey, and treat everyone well as you go, because it's, you know, we're all in this together. And the more that there's that positive, supportive, uplifting energy, that will all go faster.
I'm going to bottle that.
Fiona. Inevitably, there will be a film of your life. It goes without saying. You know, you've achieved so much. It will be called something. It will be called something along the lines of "Don't Be a Sucker" or, you know, "Tentacles," an octopus-based film title. And I'm just wondering, who would play Fiona Howarth in the story of your life?
I mean, that is a question I've never had before. I have no idea.
That was the idea.
Absolutely no idea.
No. Renée Zellweger for me. Renée Zellweger.
I'm blown away by this. I don't know what to do with this question.
Excellent. That was the idea.
Excellent, yes.
Mission accomplished.
What about you guys? Have you done this before to yourselves? Who are going to play you two? The EV Cafe. You know.
Mine would obviously be Patrick Stewart or Harry Hill.
So people do the Harry Hill thing with me, I think. Yeah, that has been said.
I was thinking, was it Compo from Last of the Summer Wine for you?
goodness me.
But I think Fiona's deflecting.
Yeah, she's broken the rules. The rules.
Now, we ask the questions.
You're not allowed to ask us questions. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just need to be able
to... I would love to ask you all the same questions that we've been through. Another time, we will have to...
Perhaps we will, but again, there's deflection. Who would play you in your film?
I'm banking your suggestion, John. I'm going. I'm going to run with that. I'm not going to argue. Yeah, sure.
Get your people to call her people.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, I'm banking it.
See, Renée Zellweger is brilliant. She is truly brilliant. But Fiona Howarth, it's not an act. This is you, and you are doing it in a big, big way, and making such an impact on us, genuinely. And listen, you know, just one moment that stands out for me is you stepping up at the last EV, what do they call it? The EV Summit in Oxford, and just going, yeah, I had some notes, but I'm not going to bother using those.
20 minutes into the room. You know that room, though? I'd walked in and it had such the creme de la creme, didn't it, of the EV industry. And I was like, you're right.
Almost all of the creme de la creme.
Almost the creme de la creme of the EV industry. But it was such a special group that I was like, actually, the usual here, you guys taught it to me. You know, the people in the room taught me this. So actually, if I give you the chat back about EVs, it's just telling you stuff you already know. So it was quite a challenge, which, you know, to think about what to say to that audience. And I think it was just trying to share the fact that we're all in it together, aren't we? And we're all, and I know how hard people are working on this and have been working for years to make this happen.
But that was it. That was exactly it. It was a presidential kind of way of dealing with the room. And it just kind of brought people together. It had authority, it had grace, it had a calmness that we need in industry, because, you know, we get excited and get quite passionate, and obviously some people get, you know, a little bit turned off by getting overexcited by different things, but you've got that calmness, that authority, that passion that brings a sense of certainty to a room. And it was very, very inspiring from my point of view. So you inspire us, and I know John, you know, I won't speak for John, but, you know, he's always very impressed by you, you know. And the conversation that you guys had for Greenfleet was just such a brilliant conversation as well. And so
John's fabulous.
He is. And
stop listen. It. Oh no, you're fabulous. No, you're fabulous.
Imagine how wouldn't you stop it? Can you imagine how I feel bumbling along with this?
You're
fabulous. Anyway, we've done all that. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I think we're all pushing in the same direction. We are so encouraged to have you in our industry, and for us is a privilege, honestly, to have you here today on the EV Cafe. We have totally loved having time with you, with your beautiful new backdrop. But also just kind of being inspired that, you know, there are people in our industry that are just solid all the way through, that have, you know, done a lot of great things, learned from mistakes, and really resilience, good people, and transferable skills. It's becoming a theme. You know, you've built those skills up, and if you listen to the podcast tomorrow, you'll see, and I mean tomorrow in real time, not in future time when this goes out. But if you, Fiona Howarth, listen to the podcast that comes out tomorrow, you will see, because it's quite fantastic that, you know, some really great people have a very, very similar path in some respects, and quite incredible. So, Fiona, listen, thank you so much. Go on, you were going to say something.
No, I'd also like to say that one of the key challenges I think facing us now in EVs is educating consumer sentiment and general understanding of the reality of EVs, not some of the nonsense that we read about sometimes in the papers, right? And and I think you guys do it in the most compelling way. And I think that what we need to do is amplify you. And so I also feel hugely privileged to be able to be part of your journey. And if there is more that I can do to kind of amplify you and get you guys out there, I would be delighted to. And may you have the best journey and the best luck on your journey to keep you going, and have the best people around you, which you do, to kind of keep you on that during the good times and the hard times. So thank you for having me and for all that you guys do.
Hey, listen, thank you. It matters. It just matters so much. And I know for John. John, any closing thoughts and words?
Yeah, Fiona, you're fabulous.
You're fabulous too.
You're fabulous.
Are we back here again?
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Fiona Howarth.
Amazing. Just you spend your life telling everybody else how good they are. And do you know what? That's the sign of a great leader. that you, it's not about you, it's about the people you work with, and that makes you the most incredible human being. So thank you for being you.
It just makes me reflect actually on that story of your phone call that kept you going. And it's just so powerful that because you'd spoken so well, and your first thought in your thought of, actually, I'm going to exit stage left, was to say, I'm going to make sure that this person's looked after. And actually, in turn, that came back to you and enabled you to, to continue. Well, I mean, is serendipitous the right word? I don't know. I'm not very good at English. I'm not the academics and all that sort of stuff. I leave that to you guys.
He's amazing. He's amazing. I think surrounding yourself by those people that lift you up.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't talk about much. So as well as the stellar set, I now have the earth set. So last summer I was away and I was like, am I doing the most I possibly can in this fight against climate change? Right. So EVs, there's amazing people in the EV industry now. Like, is the incremental difference I'm making everything that I could do? Is this the best use of my time? And what I realized is when I get good people in my team, I go much faster, the business goes much faster, right? And when I'm missing those people, when I've had some gaps, like we underhired in our finance team, and the lovely James, who has led finance for me for the last few years, he was working his socks off, but made it hard to hire and to do it and everything. So we could have gone faster with better people in at that point. And I was reflecting on this, and other people apply to me for jobs, right? They say, do you have any jobs? And I don't always have a job for them, but they're amazing people and they've got passion and energy and skills they want to give to the climate change fight, right? And I was like, well, I don't have jobs for them, but I've got other people in the network, right? And say in the EV network or even in other bits. And so I was like, how do I connect these people with those other people that are doing great things that might have the right job for them? And so I started hosting some events, getting people along that were running kind of EV or other companies. So there was like the first one was actually Right Charge, Charlie Cook. Right Charge was there and he talked. Yeah. And there's another guy who's just started a finance business called Mother Tree that's basically about helping you find a bank that's using the money well and this kind of stuff. And they talked about what they needed. But they also needed investment. So then we hosted an event with investors, and then they both found investment now, actually. And that was September. Brilliant. They're both funded. And actually now one of them's hired somebody they met through one of the events, and actually quite a few people have now found jobs through the event. And so it's how do you kind of help everybody find these amazing people, right? How do you kind of do that? And I did love it. Alice, who we didn't talk about, who's another one of those people in my life. She's like, are you basically just having a climate job fair? a little bit. Yeah, I guess a curated climate job fair. I was like, I'm going for something a bit more snazzy, but I guess we can boil it down. Anyway, so you should both come along. And you should both come along and be part of it.
And it's called the Earth Set.
The Earth Set. So now we have Paul's the women's group. What?
Paul's got a badger set.
I know, exactly. Exactly. It's like our home. It's our home.
Amazing. I love it.
Well, we should do an EV cafe one.
Well,
definitely should, because then we could get jobs that we'd enjoy.
And work with nice people.
Followers. It turned out that there's people came along, they're like, you know, there's mentors or partnerships. So there might be partners that don't know about EV Cafe yet that might really, you know, want to be part of it. I know. No, but this is the thing.
Who are these people?
We need to tell everyone about you. We need to tell everyone.
She's off again. She's off again. Amplify everybody else.
Anyway, sorry, yes, I've kind of gone on.
Don't you have a business to run?
I'm enjoying this. You guys are fabulous.
Oh, okay. You're fabulous.
You're fabulous.
I feel like I should just exit stage left now. I'm just going to go, you're fabulous. Okay, you ready?
Do it.
Thank you very much. You need me. You still need me.
Podcast
shouldn't be this much fun.
No, it's an and so there has to be a limit to the fun, and we've reached it. So Fiona Howard, listen, thank you. Thank you for the fun. Thank you for the insight. Thank you for the wisdom. And thank you for being, as one of your recommendations said, a good heart. Thank you so much. We are so grateful. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, everybody, please do, you know, like, subscribe, follow, do whatever you do. Give a review, apparently, a review of Fiona, a review of the podcast. And tell all your friends, because apparently, according to Fiona, some people don't know about the EV Cafe. What's that about?
Tell everyone.
Tell everyone. See, Fiona said it. You need to do it. Please join us for another podcast another time, but follow us on the LinkedIn. You can get us there, and the EV Cafe website, evcafe.org, and connect with us all on LinkedIn, and also connect with Fiona. And of course, if you need a job or a mentor, The Earth Set. There you go. Yes. She's going to be bombarded now.
It's good. Let's accelerate the climate action. Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's do it. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for joining us. See us next time.